We're continuing a sermon series called Altered. Oops, I just double pumped. That's okay. We're good. Altered is all about altars throughout the Old Testament. So we've been making a journey. You can see where we've been. If you ever want to catch up where we've been, we have a YouTube channel. We have it on Facebook. We also have it wordserve.org/sermons. And I know what you're thinking. Bill, why are you saying WordServe? I thought you were Union Chapel. We are, but legal paperwork and technology take time to catch up. This is what I've learned. So we'll get there eventually. But for now, wordserve.org/sermons. Today we're talking about wrestling for freedom, which sounds ironic and maybe is. And it all starts with a guy named Chris. You may recognize Chris. Now, Chris's name could be Mike. And seeing in doing that, I just hit 50% of you. Right? His name could be Bob. His name could be Bill. His name could be Cindy. His name could be Susie. His name could be Gina. We're all a part of this culture. And this culture is very performance-driven, very image-sensitive. And so as we go through our daily lives, we're encouraged by the culture around us to present certain things, success, determination. Maybe it's a certain area that you want to excel in. But we're performance-driven, are we not? And if you don't believe that, try saying, I don't really care how I do or what anybody thinks, and see the look on the faces of the people you're talking to. They'll be like, oh, you just said a bad word, right? Yeah, this is performance-driven culture. This is the way that we live. And so oftentimes we will do things that enhance our performance, or at least the appearance of our performance. It's not something that we want to do. It's not something that we're even called to do, but it's something that we feel the need to do because society demands that we perform. It's almost like being on a show and you got to step onto the stage every day. I don't know if you've ever felt this feeling when you get up in the morning. It's like, man, I got to get ready to go. I got to get the kids ready to school. I got to go to the meeting. I got to go to the whatever. I got to go to work. Wherever it is that you go, and you feel like I have to put my mask on now because I'm about to go out in public. Have you ever been there? Any mask wearers here today? Yeah, we do it all the time. Because we are performance driven, we can't let the chinks in our armor show. Right? We have to live up to the standard. But whose standard are we living up to? See, when we are performance driven, we're living up to the standard of culture. Maybe not necessarily the standard of God. There's a huge, huge difference. And so Chris is typical. He's doing everything that he needs to do, and he realizes he is so attached into performing at his job. And when he gets off his job, he's a soccer coach part-time, so he's all about performing as a soccer coach. And man, does he hear about it from the other parents. If he doesn't do it exactly right, they're going to dock his pay. Now, he's not getting paid, right? Yes. Nobody gets paid for that. Well, now around here they do, but you don't get paid for that. But the performance is your pay. The praise is what you covet. And so you drive yourself, and you drive yourself, and you start clinging onto this new identity. Okay, now I'm a soccer coach. I'm going to be the best soccer coach ever. We're not competitive here at all, right? I'm going to be the best soccer coach ever. These kids are going to love me. They're going to win the championship. Folks, it's just like Little League, right? We know that, right? In our heart of hearts. This is not like the World Cup. This is not the World Series. Whatever happened to let kids be kids? You know, this is just me speaking as a former soccer coach of three girls. I did this for years. I started before the internet was even there, right? How much soccer experience do you have, Bill? Zero. I went to the library and checked out books. That's how bad it was. Anyway, I digress. So I tried to get in. This was me, right? And at some point, you get so attached to this performance and this idea of I want to be the best coach that you start to lose a hold of other things, like maybe your relationship with your kids, or your spouse, or maybe your humanity. I found myself as a soccer coach coaching, I forget how old, I coached all three of my girls, different ages, but this is probably like 9, 10 years old. And you know, you coach them and you try and get tactics. And at first you celebrate the big wins, like, hey, they're all facing the same direction. This is awesome, right? Hey, nobody picked a dandelion today. Yeah, nobody did a cartwheel when the ball wasn't near them. Yeah, this is the small victories that we celebrate, right? Well, there was this one day that they just clicked. I mean, the team was working beautifully. They stole the ball. They passed. Boom, boom, boom. I had my two strikers running right down the field and the midfielder right here. I'm like, oh, this is beautiful. The defense is overwhelmed. These three are lined out. They can pass any direction. And there's a sure goal. And this girl on the right side dribbled the ball all the way down and shot it at the goalie, and the goalie was standing right there. Now, I was thinking to myself, well, they're just young kids. They don't really understand the game. No, I was not thinking that. I said out loud, pass the ball. And I realized, it's like toothpaste. Once you get it out, you can't take it back. It's like, I looked around to see who was looking at me. I'm just going to kind of try to blend back into the crowd. That was totally inappropriate, right? But that's what we get so absorbed into that identity, that performance-driven role, that when it shakes us, we get upset. We lose track of what's really important. And what was really important was those relationships with those girls. It's not how they win or lose. It's how they live at that level. So the coaching takes on a whole different role. It's not just about the game. It's about life. It's about community. It's about teamwork. It's about leadership. It's about all those lessons that are informal. See, I forgot that in that moment. And like Chris, you get to a point where you're just flat out exhausted. Or you realize at that moment, man, something snapped there. Something is not right. I got to rebalance here. And so you start to decide, what is it that's worth holding on to? And what is it that's worth letting go of? And if you're smart, you write that down because you tend to forget in the moment, especially if you're exhausted. How about you? Are you in that place where you've got a performance-driven culture, but you're absolutely miserable in it? You don't have to raise your hands. I already know in many cases. I know that there are pressures out there. I know that lives aren't always happy and carefree, and you get to do exactly what you love. I know this. But a lot of times it matters, because what we decide to hold on to in those moments determines our future. Maybe we can affect right now. Maybe we can. But we can affect going forward. Maybe we can't impact what happens to us. Maybe you've got a boss that's an absolute knucklehead. Maybe you've got deadlines that are unrealistic. We can't always control what happens to us, but we can control how we happen to it. You see the difference? That all depends on what is it that we decide is worth hanging on to and what is it that's worth letting go. Whoops, I double pumped. And this is the constant burden. Every day, every moment of every day, we have to decide, what am I going to let go and what am I going to hang on to? That harsh work. The story about the coach and hearing from all the parents, man, I heard that. It's like, you guys understand I'm a volunteer and I've never played soccer, right? Where are you, by the way, when everybody said, anybody want to coach, and nobody raised their hands? I was at that meeting and so were you, right? So where were you? And when they say these words, it's hurtful and it's harmful, but if I hang on to them, then I begin to believe that, wow, I'm a terrible coach. And it goes beyond that, right? You know, parents, not only am I a terrible coach, I'm a terrible human being. I probably should never grace the soccer field again. Right? Maybe you've been there, or if you're about to coach, man, I'm praying for you, right? So it's always this, what do I let go? What I hold on to all the time. So how do we take this into scripture? What do we learn from that? We're going to go to a setting today that you may or may not be familiar with. This is Jacob's story. Jacob near the end of his life is what we're going to read about, but I need to set the stage for you just a little bit. When we say this is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, we're talking about this guy. This is the Jacob that we're talking about. Now, Jacob had a twin brother named Esau, and they were nothing alike. Esau was born first, barely, and then Jacob came. Esau was a man's man. He was a hunter. He was his father's favorite. Jacob was maybe not so much. Kind of mom favored him and kind of brought him up to do some things. And the irony is that even as Jacob came out of the womb, his name basically means heel grabber. So as he was coming out of the womb, he's like, oh, not so fast, brother. I want to be first, right? And so as he comes out, he grows up. If you look at his entire life, I'm obviously giving you the Cliff Notes version. Jacob gets ahead by scheming, by deceiving, by trying to put on appearances, and he's pretty good at it. In fact, he's so good at it, at the time when his father is about to pass, and he's supposed to pass the birthright to his son Esau, who would be the oldest, granted, by just minutes, but he's still the oldest. Jacob tricks him, tricks his father, and gains Esau's birthright. Now, if you're not familiar, like, that doesn't sound like a big deal to us. It was a huge deal. Because if you were the firstborn and you got that birthright passed to you, you got double the portion of whatever the estate was. And Dad was doing pretty good. And let's just add another layer to this. Remember what I said? Esau was a really good hunter and a man's man. Not the kind of guy you want to make mad at you and then lay down at night in the wilderness, right? You could be unalived at any moment, right? So Jacob has this whole thing. He ends up fleeing. He goes to a whole nother place and continues to live by deceit, and ironically gets it happened back to him in a couple of cases. He goes, oh, so that's what that feels like. And now the Lord tells him at a much later stage of his life, he's gotten ahead. He's done really well. He's gotten wives. He's got livestock. He's got servants. He's got all kinds of things. And the Lord tells him, you need to go back to your brother Esau. Ouch. I've worked so hard, God. Why would you want me to go back? That guy's mad at me. And by the way, he's a very good hunter. Did I mention that? Yeah. Why would I go back? But to Jacob's credit, he is obedient. He does go back. But the way he goes back is interesting, informative, and very insightful. So where we're going to pick up the story is basically Jacob is preparing to go back. He's moving with all his flocks and all his family. He gets to the river and he says, okay, I hear that my brother Esau is coming with 400 men. 400 men. Does that sound like a greeting party? That doesn't sound like a greeting party to me. And so Jacob does what any true hero would do. He goes, well, I'll go out front and I'll take the brunt. That's not what he does. No, absolutely not what he does. He goes, you know what? Let's break up into groups so that if he attacks one, I won't lose everything. And let's send the groups before me. You go first, and then you go, and then you go. And every time you tell them all this stuff is a present for my brother Esau. And then maybe wave after wave of all these gifts and all these people, he'll lose his temper, and he'll go, oh, Jacob's all right. I'll welcome my brother back. Jacob actually literally sends everybody away, his wives, his livestock, his family, everybody away, and he decides to spend one more night in prayer. And then this happens. And so we're going to pick it up in Genesis in chapter 32, starting at verse 22. If you want to read along, this is what happens when Jacob ends up by himself one night. That night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, let me go, for it is daybreak. But Jacob replied, I will not let you go unless you bless me. The man asked him, what is your name? Jacob, he answered. Then the man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome. Jacob said, please tell me your name. But he replied, why do you ask my name? And then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, it is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. And the sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. These are the words of God for the people of God, and for these words we are grateful. So Jacob, all by himself, having given away everything that he owned, finally meets a divine character. Some would argue is God. Some might argue is Jesus. Doesn't matter. It's a divine character representing God. And he wrestles all night long. And the interesting thing, we're going to unpack three different things. As I read this passage, you know, the first question I had is like, okay, if this is God, is God saying he can't win? He can't beat Jacob. He could not overpower him, so that seems odd. But you know what I think? I think God absolutely could have overpowered him. At the end of an all-night wrestling match, he reaches out and touches his hip and dislocates his hip. That's some serious juice, folks. I've never done that in any sport ever, right? So if that's possible with one little touch, imagine what he could have done. So it's not that God couldn't win. It's maybe that there's some value in this struggle, that God is recognizing that there's a change going on in Jacob overnight during this wrestling match. So I hold that thought loosely. So it's not that God can't win. It's that God values a struggle because he sees the change in Jacob. The other one is Jacob is clinging to what? Because his whole life, Jacob has been clinging to deceit. He's been clinging to fame. He's been clinging to wealth, and he's done fine. Now he has none of that. It's all gone, literally all gone across the river. So what is it that Jacob's clinging to? Well, he's clinging to God and God alone. In fact, he's clinging so hard that he says, I will not release you until you bless me. That's how you know it's somebody important. And when you get to that point where you're rock bottom and you've got nothing else left and you're holding on, that sometimes is a good place to be because you recognize how important God is, how much you need him, and at the same time, how much he wants you. That's never been a question for him. He's always been there. He's always provided for us. It's just our ability to see that sometimes only comes in the struggle. Am I encouraging you to go out and find struggle, to make strife, to make your life difficult? No. But life has a way of doing that, doesn't it? You don't really need to look for it. It'll find you. But my question is, what do you do when it finds you? What do you hold on to when life's struggles find you? And they will, if they haven't already. The last thing is this name change. This whole idea of the name is very important in ancient culture. The name was very significant. If you knew the name, you knew all about the character, you knew the person, and you almost had like a sense of power over that person. You notice that Jacob gets his name change. And you might recognize the name Israel. That's the Israel that we all talk about. This is where it all starts. It starts with struggle. It starts with change. So maybe in the grappling, there's some growth. Maybe in the struggle, there's some strength. This is a lesson that we're starting to see as we interact with God and Jacob in this. And so we can delve into this and gather some good lessons, I think. The first one is you can only really cling to one thing. You ever think about that? I mean, really, when it comes down to it, what do you hold that's central? What do you hold that's unshakable? And what I would recommend is to analyze what is that thing for you? What is the non-negotiable that you will not let go, ever? I think in society today, we see a lot of shifting things that we cling to. At this point, I'm going to cling to this. Until it no longer serves me, then I'm going to let that go, and I'm going to cling to this because it looks shiny and bright. And they promised me on the internet that if I just tried it for 14 days, it would work. But now that doesn't work, but there's another one. Here's a promotion. I'm going to cling to this. And so we bounce back and forth, and we never have any integrity in what's central and core to us. So no wonder we feel like we're buffeted about by waves. No wonder we feel like we can't get our footing under us. No wonder we feel like Chris. Because we've lost the one central thing that anchors us always, and that's God's presence. You can only really hold on to one thing. So my question to you this morning is, what is the one thing that you're willing to hold on to no matter what? What's the one thing that will serve you? It may not look the shiniest. It might not have the best promotional materials. It certainly doesn't have the playtime in our modern culture that everything else does, because you can get all kinds of advice, all kinds of life coaches, all kinds of programs, but you can only get one God. And frankly, that's good news to me. I don't have to look at all those things. I know exactly where to look. It's always been here. It will always be here. You can only really hang on to one thing at a time. So what is it that you're hanging on to? What identity has been formed in you? As we talked about last week, our identity informs how we behave. So what's your identity today? Is it soccer coach? Is it PTA mom, or whatever they call that now? They probably don't call it that. Is it cookie lady? Is it coffee person? Is it sound tech? Is it worship leader? What's the title that you hold on to today? Because the real title that we all share in common is child of God. That's a great title. I dare you to come up with one that's better. You can only cling to one thing, so decide what that is. Here's the other one. God doesn't dominate us, but he will engage us. I'm going to use another jujitsu example. Why? Because it's just fun. So in jujitsu, where you, I mentioned last week, it's the art of folding clothes while people are still in it, right? So you grapple with each other. You do all kinds of submissions and groundwork and all this stuff. And oftentimes, a higher belt, there's a phrase that we use, hey, thanks for letting me work. Because a higher belt, especially if they're heavier, younger, athletic, can absolutely smash you for an entire five-minute round. And that's where you question your life's choices. Like, who said this would be a good idea? Join jujitsu, they said. It'll be fun, they said. Yeah, smash, 5 minutes, can't breathe. No, that's not fun. And so a lot of times the higher belts will kind of give you an opening. Like, you're still going to struggle. They're not just giving it away. You got to work for it. But they'll let you get out, and they'll let you move a little bit. And at the end of the round, I'm always very grateful, and I say, hey, thanks for letting me work. Because I'm hoping next time they'll let me work and not smash me, right? It's not that they're being too easy. In fact, if they're too easy, that doesn't work because I don't learn the technique under stress. That's the whole point. You got to learn the technique under stress, just like you have to live life under stress, because I don't know of anybody's life that doesn't have stress. Anybody here have an absolutely stress-free life? Good, because my next question was going to be, anybody here detached from reality? Yeah, you have to learn the thing under pressure, and a good upper belt knows exactly how much pressure, right there almost at the failing point, but yet they let you succeed, right, that time. And guess what? You grow from that. There's strength in the struggle. There's growth in the grappling. You get better, and next time that same belt goes, oh, they're getting better. I'll get a little harder. And that's where you try not to act like you're improving too quick, right? just a little bit. Just a little bit where I was last time. Anybody who's done it knows exactly what I'm talking about, but I'm talking about life as well. A lot of times it'll get right up there and just feel like you're pinned and there's no place to go. But don't stop struggling. Don't stop grappling with life, because there is growth in that. There is strength in that. God knows that. And I'm convinced that's why he allows sometimes us to struggle, because in the struggle there is growth. If you've ever done a workout program, you know at some point your body hurts. Why does your body hurt? Because you broke it down. Anybody ever get their fitness goals made by never lifting anything, never walking, never running, never changing your diet, never worrying about your sleep? Shall I go on? You get the idea, right? So he doesn't dominate us. He doesn't make it impossible, but he does engage us. Engage back. Yeah. Don't just be passive. Say, well, God's going to do something. Yeah, God is doing something. He wants you to participate in it. Yeah. And I'm not talking about salvation. That is taken care of. You don't have to do that. You just have to believe. I'm talking about everything else. God, please make me a witness for you. I pray in the morning. Somebody comes up and goes, yeah, I don't really know about that God thing. It's like, God, please send somebody to talk to this person. I don't know what to say. You know? Engage. Do you have to be perfect? No, not unless your name is Jesus Christ. Thank God I don't see him here. I mean, I do see him here. I don't see him. But see, this is where these quotes can be mistaken, you know, taken out of context. Bill said Jesus isn't here. No, Jesus is here. But you don't have to be perfect. That's my point. My point is engage. Jiu-jitsu is another great example. How many times do you engage in a technique and it fails and it fails and it fails and it fails? And it's easy to go, you know what, that doesn't work. Or jiu-jitsu doesn't work. Or it's just not for me. But what about that 99th time when it works and it clicks? And you go, I got it. I got it. I can do this. Man, there is no greater feeling. And I'm going to encourage you in your Christian life, there is no greater feeling ever than when you feel like you just can't, you can't, you can't, you can't. Engage. You don't have to be perfect. But you do have to cast seed. We're not called to win every person to Christ. Did Christ even win everybody over to him? You ever think about that? There were several that turned away. heard everything that he had to say, saw every miracle that he did, and still walked away from him. Our measure of success is not how many people we convert to Christ. Our measure of success is how many seeds we keep sowing. Keep sowing. Yeah. Not, oh, well, that didn't work. I guess I'll never do that again. No, engage. Have I made my point? Engage. You don't have to be perfect. You don't even have to win. But we do have to engage. The next thing is surrender reveals our true identity. Nobody likes this word surrender, and I don't blame you. It sounds weak. It sounds like I'm just laying down and giving up. But when we surrender all these things that we're holding on to because of our performance-based culture, we start to peel away layers like an onion. And if we're listening to God, and God is a part of this process of things that we're letting go and holding on to, let me just throw this thought out for you. Who made us? Who knit us together in our mother's womb, wonderfully and fearfully made? The creator of the universe. So if God is saying, put that down, pick this up, don't you think he knows exactly who we were made to be and what we're supposed to do? See, when we lay things down that this culture puts on us and we pick up things that God gives us, we actually reveal our true identity because he's the one who made us. He knows best. And if you've ever lived some other identity and then found the true identity in Christ, you know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't found that yet, engage. Don't stop until you do. And if you get pulled back in the other direction, re-engage. Don't settle for what the world tells you you are. Settle for what the one who made you tells you you are. And you'll find an abundant life. I guarantee it, or your money back. Finally, rock bottom is not a requirement, but surrender is. I don't know how many people get to this point where they're just clinging, they're clinging, they're clinging, they're clinging, they're holding on, even though they know and everybody around them knows it's not working. It's culture telling you this is what you should cling to, and they get all the way to rock bottom, and finally, when there's no place else to go and nothing else to cling to but God, they go, you know what? I guess I'll let go and I'll cling to God. People, why are we so abusive to ourselves? Why don't we just cut to the chase and drop that stuff now and cling to God now? Why do we have to go to rock bottom? Well, the answer is you don't have to, but we're so doggone stubborn sometimes, aren't we? We just cling, 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 and we get to the rock bottom, and we get broken, and finally we reach out for that thing that we should have had all along. Amen. Can I ask you this morning, just let go of the things that don't matter. Let go of the things that culture is telling you, and hold on to God. Let's just cut to the chase. I don't want to see anybody hit rock bottom. I bet you don't either. And if you've ever seen what I'm talking about, you know how miserable that is. I want to save you that trouble this morning. I don't want to see you there. I'd rather you just cut to the chase. Let go of the things that culture is telling you you need to be or do, and be who God made you to be. It sounds simple. It's really hard. That's why we do this in community. That's why we do this together. That's why we have brothers and sisters that we can talk to, share experiences with, support, encourage, and all the things that this book tells us we should do. So what do we do? I built an altar and I labeled rocks. This is the extent of my computer skills right here. So the first thing is we got to identify, and this is nothing new that I'm saying. Every week we've been talking about identify what it is that's in your way. Put it on your altar and sacrifice it. You can literally write it down on a piece of paper and shred it and watch it go. Or if you're more like me, you can light it on fire and watch it go, right? Make it exciting. Identify that, release it, give it back to God. And then feel the freedom, but don't dwell there. Because when you've been carrying a heavy load of cultural expectation for a long time, that's not you. When you let that down, oh, there's a wonderful euphoric almost feeling. It's like, wow, I feel so light. I like this. I like not having any responsibility at all. And that lasts for, what, 2 minutes? And then the kids need something, the dog needs let out, the car breaks down, you know what I mean, right? So yes, enjoy the freedom, but don't stay there. Cling then to God. Make sure that as you release something, don't just leave your hands empty. Empty hands are what? the devil's workshop. Yes, thank you. Idle hands are the devil's workshop, is a literal saying, right? So when you release the stuff of the culture, don't leave your hands empty. Cling then to God, because nature abhors a vacuum. It will fill it with something. You fill it first. You be proactive. You grab onto God. And then finally, lead others to do the same, because I don't know how many people you can see on a daily basis that are suffering the same exact culture sickness. They're performance driven. They're carrying a heavy burden that they were never meant to carry. They're living an identity that is not them, was never meant to be them. But yet, culture and expectation says this is who you must be. When you see it and you recognize it, don't judge them. Don't go, hey, you know what? You're living by culture. You're doing it all wrong. Let me show you how to do it. Because, I mean, you can do that, but has that ever worked for anybody here? No. Has anybody ever tried that here? Maybe that's the first question. No. No, another way is go, hey, man, I see that you're under something really heavy. You want to talk about that? Hey, I understand that you're under a lot of stress. I can see it. Yeah, I mean, I can see that you're bearing something super heavy. Would you want to come to a community group with me? Just hang around a bunch of guys or and girls, talk about things. Hey, have you ever heard of this guy, Jesus? He has a yoke that's easy and a burden that's light. I'd love to tell you more about him. Would you like to know? See, evangelism is not that hard. You just have to find the pressure point and find God and connect the two and then watch the thing happen. It's amazing. We put too much performance-driven emphasis on evangelism. Let it happen. But you got to engage. I think I said that before. And then you got to lead others to do the same. Why do we do this? Why do we even bother? Because a guy named Jacob wrestled with a divine being all night. And at the end of that, not only did he get a name change, he got a destiny fulfilled. That's where we come from. That is our lineage. But there was another guy that wrestled all night and got a name change. You may have heard of this guy. His friends called him Jesus. We call him the Messiah, the Christ. He wrestled all night in that garden. Is there any other way that this can happen? And when God said no, he said okay. He fulfilled his destiny. He lived into what God made him to do. And if it weren't for this, well, we wouldn't be here and we wouldn't be saved. So for this, I am eternally grateful. Well, where does it make a difference? Well, in our daily lives, right? Because no matter, and you can look at this picture on the left as physically old, worn out, and unable, or spiritually old, unable, and worn out. You can be a teenager and feel like this on the inside. But here's the thing. When it comes to letting go, we can let go of a lot of things. But you know the one thing that never lets go of us? Is the guy on the right. Have you ever thought about that? At the end of time, when you see him face to face, the one thing that is never let go is he has never let go of you. No matter how imperfect we are, no matter how many times we screw it up, he still got us. So let go of culture. Get hold of God and know this. He will never let you go. Let's pray. God, thank you for the grip that never lets us go. Thank you for the love that knows no bounds, that can conquer anything that we do to separate ourselves from you. Your love will never be separate from us, God. Help us to appreciate this morning as we decide what it is that we need to lay down, but more importantly, what we need to cling to. And God, as we approach this time of communion, and pray that you would put on our hearts the very thing or things that we need to let go of. Because this morning, we're going to have our hands ready and available to accept you in this act of communion. God, we can't do that if we're clinging on to something else. So in this moment, right now, help us to see what it is that we're clinging on to that's preventing us from experiencing the abundant life that you have for us. And then give us the courage to lay that down this morning. so that we can accept the gift of your Son, Jesus Christ. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.